geography of the Middle East has been drawn with many maps down through the ages. The countries of the region have all had many names, known many different rulers. 5 years ago, Tunisia, Egypt, Libya, and Yemen all managed to throw off their dictatorial rulers in the Arab Spring. And in the ensuing chaos, the map of the region was buffeted once again by waves of refugees and invading armies and militias and internal uprisings. The Sinai Peninsula, which lies along Egypt's easternmost frontier bordering the Gaza Strip and Israel, is one of the oldest geographic features in the Middle East, ruled by the pharaohs of ancient Egypt, won by the Persians, the Romans, the Ottomans, the British, the Egyptians, the Israelis, and then returned to Egypt as part of the Egyptian-Israeli peace accords. Today, the Sinai is more on its own than it's ever been. Under nominal control from Cairo, it has become a land of underground insurgents, including a faction of the so-called Islamic State. It is also Egypt's vacation land, with beachfront cities like Nuweiba and Sharm el-Sheikh. Journalist Mohamed Sabri chronicles this dual identity in his new book, Sinai, Egypt's Linchpin, Gaza's Lifeline, Israel's Nightmare.
The Sinai Peninsula has been perceived by the world like this because it's a black spot. No one knows what's happening in the Sinai. The Egyptian consecutive regimes have kept it a blacked out zone in terms of media coverage and flow of information. And this is why when it's quiet, everyone thinks it's quiet. And when it explodes in our faces with the crashing of a Russian passenger jetliner or an attack, a terrorist attack on some hotel or some government facility, everyone starts wondering what is going on in the Sinai. This is surprising. But the minute this total lack of access disappears, we will all realize that what we thought was quiet was never quiet.
Give people a sense of what you see if you spend any time at night or at dawn in the Sinai Peninsula?
Well, it depends where you spend that night or dawn in the Sinai Peninsula, because if you spend it in the south where the hotels and the beach resorts are, you will be seeing the moon rise over the mountain strips of Saudi Arabia across the Aqaba Gulf. You'll be seeing the flickering lights of Eilat in the distance of Jordan as well, and you'll be enjoying some of the most beautiful beaches and dive sites in the world. But if you go deeper into the Sinai, exploring the reality of the Sinai, the Bedouin communities, the suffering of those communities, you will be shocked by what you see. You will realize that there are some parts of the Sinai who have not seen or known modernity until today. They are living in medieval eras, given the marginalization, the lack of development, and the lack of government care. And nowadays, if you go to the north, you will be seeing suicide bombers, unfortunately. You'll be seeing massive military mobilization happening everywhere. And if you're unlucky enough, you will be caught in the line of fire, just like hundreds and thousands of civilians who live up there who are caught between a military institution that's waging war on terrorists and terrorists who are waging war on both the military and the society in general.
What is your passion about the Sinai? Where does it come from?
Well, I love the Sinai because it's very genuine. It's extremely virgin and beautiful in that sense. But I'm also fascinated by its importance as a geopolitical region. It is just exceptional. And the fact that you go there, and as I've told many of my colleagues and friends before, the minute I go there and I have AK-47s shoved in my face all the time, it's a signal. It's a very dangerous signal that this place is ready to turn into a catastrophe. And this has been the case in 2011, 2012, and even before that. And finally, it exploded into a big catastrophe that no one can contain.
Tell me a story of the radicalization in the Sinai that you experienced firsthand. And there are a number of stories where I'm not quite sure how it is you managed to get out alive.
Well, it's a combination of luck and being talented with what you do. But the radicalization, it's a very important question. And the radicalization basically is a process, a propaganda process that relies on every failure of the state and every point of vulnerability of the society. So I'll give you a very minimal example where you have the biggest country of the Middle East, Egypt, with the Nile River. And despite that, the community does not have potable water, let alone talking about development or industries or any of those big projects. And you have youth members, teenagers in that Bedouin community, that the only thing they see from their homeland is police crackdowns, hostility from the population in other areas, and a continuous sense of alienation. And this is exactly what the radical groups rely on. They come to those vulnerable parts of the population, those groups of young, angry, and disappointed kids, and they start telling them that, well, this state has done nothing to you. As a matter of fact, it hates you. They capitalize on our failure as a government, as a regime, as institutions, and as a population in general.
Why do you think the Sinai is so unknown? It's a sort of a no man's land. And how does that make it an ideal place for ISIS to exploit?
Well, the Sinai is so unknown because simply there's one reason. The Egyptian authorities, the Egyptian consecutive regime since the end of the war with Israel in 1974 and the Israeli withdrawal in 1982, since then Egypt has, for the lack of a better term, has committed massive violations and has led this place to become a field of corruption, a field of arms trafficking, human trafficking, and smuggling. And those flawed policies should always be hidden. And simply, the Egyptian regime under Hosni Mubarak specifically for 30 years has turned the Sinai in the mass mentality of the world into a strip of beach tourism resorts and a barren desert with bandits running around. Now, the beach resorts do exist there, but they don't reflect on the local population in any way, and they don't show or represent the flawed policies or the criminal policies that are being applied all over the Sinai, and that mainly led us to what we're suffering right now. Oh, now the media blackout is worse than ever because more flawed policies, more violations towards the community and towards the national security of the state in general are being committed. And the Egyptian regime thinks that simply the solution is to blackout the Sinai, keep the media from having access to it, and even keep other governments who work with us, other allies like the United States, the European Union, keep them from working with us on the Sinai, because we do not want to expose whatever is happening there. And there is a solution there. The minute you start amending and overhauling and changing your policies, the minute you start opening this region for media coverage, you reverse the situation gradually. And the Egyptian state has every element it requires for that success to be accomplished.
Mohamed Sabri is author of Sinai, Egypt's Linchpin, Gaza's Lifeline, and Israel's Nightmare. Mohamed, thanks so much.
You're most welcome. Thank you for having me, John.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.